Amp. Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
loved the drum. Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, hype this week, but I'm not.
Welcome back as we get the second half of today's show going for you on a Throwback Thursday in the Doghouse. It was on this day in 1974, 43 years ago, that Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band played their first of a three-night, six-show residency at the newly opened Bottom Line Club in New York City. The shows received rave reviews. They created a buzz in the music industry, and the rest became music history. And they took off. So whether you like his politics or not, he's way to the left. You got to love his music, right? Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band are getting a full treatment today. So we've got that for you. Obviously, SEC Media Day is wrapping up earlier today, a few hours ago now, in Hoover. I was not there this morning. I was not throwing shade at Auburn by not being there. Just really didn't want to be broadcasting from the last table on Radio Row, as they're piling up the tables and the vacuum cleaners are going and everything else. Pretty much Deadsville at that point. In a few minutes, we will have the audio from Gus Malzahn's comments. We'll take a listen to that as well. Also, some of the comments from Hugh Freeze as well. We are efforting right now Matt Scalise from AL.com. We'll see if we get him. In the meantime, they were all over that deal. Obviously, AL.com, very strong presence there at SEC Media Days. In the meantime, the phone lines are open at 866-485-9867. 866-485-9867 will get you in. There's a lot of different ways to crunch these numbers. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and say, look, I'm not being a homer for the SEC, because I am a homer for the SEC. I don't apologize about that anymore. I mean, it was a time when I might apologize a little bit about that. But what's the point? I am a homer for the SEC. I love the SEC. To me, the SEC is always the best conference. And it's not just because of wins and losses in national championships and having a team be there, in the play. The only conference to put a team in the playoff the first 3 years of the playoff. There's a lot of different ways you can look at it. And there are a lot of other things that make a conference great. But when you make the argument that it's anything other than winning, then you sound like the Big Ten, because the Big Ten's a great conference as well. The Big Ten is a better conference than the ACC in terms of just being a football conference. Not in performance. They were 2-6 against the ACC. Not in performance. But the Big Ten, the history, the schools, the Big House, the Horseshoe, Happy Valley, Kinnick Stadium. I mean, the Ten is just, the fall. The ACC was the best performing conference last year in college football. But that's the, that's that argument that that people who are losing will make. If I were to say the SEC, look, the SEC has the pageantry. The SEC has the tradition of the South. The SEC has the best tailgating. I've always told you this in the past. I mean, the difference between the SEC and the Big Ten, even in some of that, the Big Ten, you show up at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning to tailgate before a game. In the SEC, you show up on Thursday. In the Big Ten, homecoming queen is Miss 4-H. In the SEC, the homecoming queen is Miss America. You know what I'm saying, T-Mac?
The homecoming queen thing got me pretty good. That was funny.
I mean, that's part of the things that are different about it. But, you know, numbers are stubborn. Now, you can crack numbers a lot of different ways, and I'll give you an example. First of all, look, there's no denying last year the ACC, 51-17, 71% winning percentage, non-conference games. SEC, 48-19.
Yeah.
See, specific. Now you say, well, the ACC was 0-2 against the Pac-12, and the SEC was 3-0 against the Pac-12. Not a huge body of work. The ACC, you know, was 6-4 against the American Conference. 6-4 against the, you know, the American Conference, the American Athletic Conference, the AAC. The SEC was 2-1 there, but in 14 games. No conference plays another conference more than the SEC and the ACC. And by the way, I am a big believer that, you know how they have the you know, the Big Ten, Big 12 challenge, and or the Big East, the ACC challenge in basketball at the beginning of the season? I honestly believe that we should have an ACC-SEC challenge to start the season. You want to talk about ending scheduling controversies? I think you should. You already have Florida State playing Florida, and Georgia playing Georgia Tech, and South Carolina playing Clemson, and Louisville playing Kentucky. You already have all of that stuff. You know, why not have Alabama play Miami and have the state schools play each other, have North Carolina and North Carolina State play Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And, you know, you can come up with the matchups. Come up with whatever matchups you want. You can have Auburn play Syracuse, you know. You can have LSU play Boston College in a battle of the, you know, in a battle of cultures. But numbers aren't, you know, numbers are stubborn. In 14 games, the ACC went 10-4 against the SEC. Matt Scalise joins us from AL.com, where they were very busy with SEC media days. Matt, welcome in. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tom.
Jimbo Fisher is at AC, I call it the ACC Minute, the ACC Luncheon or whatever. I guess they do 2 days, you know, so we'll give them credit for that. They go 2 days over there. SEC, we got to do everything over the top, so it's 4 days. But Jimbo Fisher said earlier today at ACC Media Days that the ACC is now the premier football conference in the land. And when you look at their, and it's not just about Clemson winning the national championship game. I think it's too simple to say, well, yeah, we have the national championship, so that's the case. But they had the better record non-conference, and more importantly, they were 10-4 against the SEC. Is Jimbo Fisher onto something that for 2016, the ACC is the best college football conference in the land?
You know, I think in 2016, they certainly had the best team in college football. I think it's funny to hear. Look, if Dabo's on TV making this argument, I think I'm a little more willing to listen. But, you know, I think there's some ulterior motives going on when it's a guy who didn't win the league talking about how his league is the best in college football, because it makes his otherwise disappointing season look a little bit better. I think it's certainly Jimbo did his part, I think, in making the case, because they pretty much have dominated the SEC East champion for the last 2 years. It hasn't really even been a contest. So I would say right now that the top of the ACC is a lot stronger than the top of the SEC, because there's really only been one elite team in the SEC for the last couple of years, at least one nationally elite team. And Florida State and Clemson have I think, been capable. North Carolina a couple of years ago looked like they were good enough to beat just about anybody. I you know, top to bottom is always such a difficult conversation. But I think overall right now, the SEC's biggest issue it's going to have right now is that it doesn't have another program with a national championship resume, I think, right now. They don't have any other national championship caliber coaches except for Nick Saban in that league right now. And the ACC has two. So yeah. They have twice as many as the SEC. It's as simple as that. But, you know, I think we're mostly talking academic stuff here. To say that this is some kind of definitive thing that the ACC is clearly better than the SEC, I think that's a little bit of a joke.
Well, 10-4 is a big number, but then here's the other side of the story. And again, these are arguments that we've never made in the past 10 years because the SEC's numbers are always better. But then when you end up on the short side, you start looking for the minutiae. But I think this is significant based on what you just said about the top. Those 10 wins by the ACC all come from five teams. It's Clemson, Florida State, Georgia Tech, believe it or not, 3-0, but you know, they beat Vanderbilt, they beat Kentucky. But they did beat Georgia, and they, you know, they don't always beat Georgia, and they beat Georgia. But it's five teams that won those 10 games. On the other side, the SEC was represented by nine different teams, which means a lot more of the SEC depth is Vandy played too. South Carolina played them. Arkansas played them. It wasn't just Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Florida, and Georgia, you know, playing teams from the ACC. And who's not represented in this thing are teams like Boston College and Wake Forest and, you know, Pitt and, you know, those kind of people. So the Dukes of the world and so on. So those guys aren't being represented in it, where the SEC is sending pretty much their entire conference out there against the ACC, and they're just getting whacked by the same people over and over again, Clemson, Florida State, and remarkably Georgia Tech.
Yeah, well, Georgia Tech thing is, you almost kind of have to discount Georgia Tech. They're such an anomalous program in college football. They're capable of beating or losing to almost anybody in any given week. It's an absolutely bizarre setup they have there. And I don't know if I want to take too many lessons away from any game involving Georgia Tech. But I think Florida State and Clemson have made it their mission to show that they're capable of beating anybody in the region. They need to do that because it's who they recruit against. They recruit against SEC schools probably a lot more often than they do against other ACC schools. So it makes sense for them to play more SEC teams out of conference, and they've benefited from doing that, and they've gotten some good wins in the last few years from doing that. I still think right now, if we're talking about the entire league, which I don't know what the conversation is, but the bottom of the ACC is abysmal. It's absolutely as bad as anybody you want to point out in the SEC having a disappointing time right now. I guarantee you there's more NFL talent in the bottom half of the SEC than there is in the bottom half of the ACC, and it's not close. Wake Forest, Boston College, like you mentioned, those are teams that would have trouble putting together a winning record in a much smaller conference than the ACC. They're not competitive Power 5 programs right now. And,
yeah,
you know, I think the SEC's big issue going forward is they simply don't have a high-caliber level of coaching in that league right now. Not the way that I think some of the other Power 5 conferences do. I think you look at the Big Ten and the ACC and the Pac-12, certainly, I think there's more stability in the Big 12. I don't know if there's a lot of guys that I'd want to be, you know, competing for and kind of hire away from where they are. But they've been at their program for a while. They kind of have. There's a lot of guys that have been in the Big 12 at their current program for a number of years. But outside of that, the SEC, I think, because of Nick Saban's lengthy run here at Alabama, people got antsy in the SEC. They started pulling the trigger early. They did a lot of coach swapping, and a lot of them aren't super thrilled with where they are right now, but they're locked into massive contracts that they may not want to get out of yet. So there's a lot of schools that are less than thrilled, I think, with the coach that they have right now. That they're probably not absolutely convinced that they have a national championship caliber coach. There's a lot of other conferences that I think have coaches capable of winning national titles. I'm not sure we can say that in the SEC outside of Nick Saban and maybe Gus Malzahn, who at least got his team there.
Yeah. Matt Scalise with SAL.com. Andy, not very subliminal. Nick Saban said yesterday, Florida State especially is built like an SEC team. You know, like our teams, you think of Florida State, you think fast, explosive players, which they have a lot of, but they're also big, physical, play great, defense, tough. And I think it's probably Jimbo's experience in this league. That's sort of why he built his team that way. So, you know, what Nick, and of course that's who they open with. So what Nick Saban is saying basically is that, yeah, Florida State is an SEC team playing in the ACC, and thanks for their coach and his training that he had in the SEC. Oh, by the way, with me. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, that's a type of shade to be thrown right there, I think, on what Jimbo was saying before Jimbo said it.
And people have said that for years, you know, and I think it's sort of a slight that SEC fans like to throw at Florida State is, you know, it's going back to the 90s, you know, that they've kind of spent their years beating up on programs that don't really take football as seriously when they sort of turn down an opportunity to be in the SEC where they would seem to be a more natural fit. Obviously, that's not really very likely or possible going forward. I think you're going to start to hear people say the same thing about Clemson. Ultimately, those two teams playing each other every year is a great thing for college football right now. They're absolutely superpower programs with tons of talent and great coaches. And I think they're going to get their opportunities to face off against SEC teams. Florida State does it every year at least once. Clemson obviously plays one at the end of the season, but it seems like they play another SEC team out of conference more years than not, and it's been Auburn more years than not, too. So I think you can't – I don't think you can be critical of anything that – Florida State and Clemson have done. They're probably a little bit insecure about the fact that they clearly view the other SEC schools as kind of their natural rivals, even though they're not in the SEC. And I think the SEC likes to rib them for that.
Yeah, and there are some early matchups that are going to be very interesting in terms of SEC gravitas, not just with the ACC. That Florida-Michigan game, I think, is going to go a long ways towards shaping some people's thoughts. Even a game like Georgia Tech and Tennessee, two teams that aren't necessarily competitors for their conference championship, but that are in the better half of their conference, I think people will look at that game and try and make some sort of decisions based on whether or not if Tennessee can handle Georgia Tech or Tech handles Tennessee. And then, of course, week two, Auburn and Clemson. Auburn was, you know, they took that to the final play last year. Clemson ends up national championship. So if Auburn can go into Clemson and be very, very good again, maybe even win that game this time, I think that also will shape perception, you know, regardless of what happened week one between Alabama and Florida State.
I actually think the Alabama-Florida State game might be, it's obviously everybody wants to watch it because it's going to be a high-powered matchup, but in terms of how it could impact the team's respective seasons and the playoff picture, I think it might actually be the least important of those big games on opening weekend, because I think the loser, barring some kind of blowout, I think the loser really won't be put in any kind of bad position. I don't think it'll be held against them if they lose that game, and I don't think it will prevent them from getting to the college football playoff. You talk about those other games, though. To me, you look at Auburn, I think, has a massive opportunity and that road trip to Clemson. I think if they win that, they're immediately launched into a serious national title contender discussion. You talk about Florida and Michigan. Those are two programs that are very, very hungry for some national respect and credibility. They kind of feel like they're not being given their due yet. They're waiting for their big breakthrough moment. Either one, I think, with a win in that game, will immediately be taken a lot more seriously. And, you know, I don't know. I hesitate to ever try and draw any kind of judgment from a game involving Georgia Tech because it's so weird. But I think you could definitely look at it as a little bit of a referendum on Butch Jones. There's a lot of apprehension about him going into this season and what he's going to be able to do going forward at Tennessee. If you lose that game, if you're Tennessee, I think there's going to be a lot of instant frustration, and his leash will be extremely short for the rest of the season if he opens the season with a loss to Georgia Tech.
The other comment from Nick Saban that, of course, drew a lot of interest, especially in this state, was the now infamous omission of Auburn in his lists of I can't think of a team and I don't respect in the SEC, and he rattled off 9 or 10 teams. None of them were Auburn, and you would think that that would be at the top of his mind because of the rivalry and so on and so forth. We've had a lot of fun with that over the last couple of days. I don't know if it's just an innocent thing because he does go on the SEC network and then mention Auburn. But on the other hand, you think of Nick, how he looks for, quote, low, what do you call them, slow curveballs, low-hanging curveballs, high curveball, whatever that was that he got loose on in the TV room. You know, he kind of knows where he's going to pick his spots. It's pretty much calculated. What was your take? Was that a calculated thing or just an oversight by a guy who also called the Chick-fil-A game against Florida State the Chick-fil-A preseason game?
Yeah, I don't know that it was intentional. I think it'd be fun to believe that it was. But I think there's plenty of examples over the years, and even recently, of Nick Saban saying nothing but positive things about Auburn and Gus Malzahn. And there's no question that what Auburn has done under Malzahn has helped to shape the way that Nick Saban has built his program. I don't know if there's any greater sign of respect that you can have than that, than to say we're going to actually change the way we recruit and the way we coach and the way we prepare because of what weaknesses this other program has exposed every time they've played us. I think Nick Saban has to have respect for Auburn given the fact that they've really, you know, even in Alabama's most dominant era, perhaps in its history, they have managed to hold their own with Alabama. They've got 3 wins against Alabama under Nick Saban. I'm not sure any other program has done that. I'm pretty sure that they're the only one. Mm-hmm. And Gus Malzahn has been part of all of those, and really has, you know, I think been a thorn in his side. You know, I think the last couple of years, Alabama's obviously gotten the better of them and hasn't really had to sweat it out too much. But, you know, anytime Gus Malzahn has had a team that he has a quarterback he has trust in and feels good about, Alabama's had a hell of a time beating them. So I would have no doubt that Nick Saban has nothing but the proper amount of respect for Auburn football, especially going into this season.
And then you could spin it the other way, as your Joseph Goodman did in an entertaining piece, saying that Nick Saban left out the Tigers. Quote, why mention Auburn as a team on the rise when the Tigers are already there? And he basically goes on to predict that Auburn will win the Iron Bowl, and says that they match up well against Alabama with the offensive and defensive lines and a talented running game and so on. And a lot is being, you know, a lot is being said about Jared Stidham. And I like Jared Stidham an awful lot. And it's not like the Jake Coker situation where, you know, we thought Jake Coker would step in and play immediately as a junior, but we hadn't really seen him do anything. Stidham, at least we saw something, albeit in the Big 12. But, man, that by the time they actually tee it up and play a game against Georgia Southern, Stidham would have like the Heisman Trophy sitting in his locker already at that point. That pressure on that kid is just mounting like crazy, and they're not even ready to say that he's the starter yet. And giving a lot of love today to Sean White as properly he should do with Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, you know, I think he wants to have as much competition as he can in fall camp, but I don't think there's any illusions that Jared Stidham is the guy who everybody expects to win the job and to play well. It would be a big disappointment to everyone, including Jarrett Stidham, if he wasn't able to win that job. And I would say you should be concerned if he doesn't win the job if you're Auburn. But, you know, the big thing with Auburn, I think, right now is they're going into a season. You know, there was so much expectation about hiring Gus Malzahn of what it would do for Auburn's offense. And you know, he was viewed as this offensive guru, and this was going to change Auburn football. It was going to make them an offensive powerhouse. And I think there's been some disappointment with how that's gone. I don't think that they've ever had an offense, even in 2013, that played at a consistent level the way that Gus Malzahn sort of anticipated he could have if he could, recruit at a program like Auburn. I think some of that is because they haven't been able to recruit at the level that he would probably like to. Auburn has recruited very well from a national standpoint. They're in the SEC, and that means that recruiting a top 10 class might mean you're still probably fifth or sixth in your conference. So some of it's come down to that. Auburn has some great offensive talent this year. This is probably the best collection Gus Malzahn has had, from quarterback to running back to receiver, and they've got some really good offensive linemen as well. You know, I think defense is one area that would be interesting to see. Kevin Steele has done a great job transforming the defense and really getting them to play a lot more consistently over there. But he loses some pretty key pieces from last season. And I think it's going to be very, very key to this Auburn team's success, see whether Kevin Steele can still have that defense playing at the same level they've been in the last year or maybe year and a half, even though they're going to be missing, you know, two dynamic pass rushers from last year and a really important defensive back. I think that's going to – nobody wants to talk about Auburn defense right now because it's just Malzahn coach team, but to me that's going to tell the story a lot more than anything else, is can Auburn's defense maintain that great level they played at last year?
Best thing about Goodman's column, you know, man. I mean, that thing went up at about 9 o'clock this morning. There's already 832 comments. The very entertaining comments section is alive off of Joseph Goodman's piece. And to put it in perspective, Craig Stevenson's piece about Jimbo Fisher and his comments about the ACC and opening up with Alabama has gotten zero comments. So we know everybody is commenting on Goodman's piece about the Iron Bowl. So that's all you got to do is make a July prediction in the Iron Bowl and to fire up the comments section. So it's good for the interaction.
Yeah, look, Joe knows how to get people going. That's why that's why Joe's around here. He definitely knows how to stir people up, and he's been touting that Auburn prediction all week. I don't know if there are too many other people in media days that voted for Auburn to win the SEC, but Joe was definitely one of them. There's no question. He is on that train right now.
All right, man. Appreciate you. Look, you guys, outstanding work this week as usual there at SEC Media Days. Tremendous coverage and a great resource for us and everybody else who's following SEC Media Day. So congratulations. Take a few days off, will you, Matt? I mean, it's you got a little time yet before the kids report to practice. So y'all earned a little break over there at AL.com.
We've been stockpiling stuff all week that you'll be seeing the next couple of weeks. So definitely don't navigate too far from AL.com. We have tons of stuff coming the next couple of weeks that we spent this whole week gathering up.
It's always on the toolbar, my friend. Always on the toolbar. Matt Scalise. Matt, I appreciate you as always, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. Always have it right there on the toolbar. Always ready to click. All right, when we come back, Gus Malzahn, full-length comments from him from earlier today at SEC Media Days. We'll have that next right here on the Tom Abraham Show. 7:30, 103.9, EM.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
Welcome back. Throwback Thursday in the Doghouse. Bruce Springsteen is who we are featuring. Earlier today, Gus Malzahn was in the spin cycle, going through the car wash, as we call it, at SEC Media Days, going from room to room and so on. We were able to compile some of his comments that he made in the TV room. Let's take a listen to Gus Malzahn earlier today.
Really team leaders. I'm excited for them. They're going to do a great job. I will tell you this, I think I've been on the first day. The last 3 years, it's completely different on the last day. So looks like there's not quite as many people in here.
Okay, raise your hand and we'll get a microphone to you for the Q&A. Coach, right here to the left with our first question.
Coach, I'm wondering, Daniel Carlson, obviously an outstanding kicker. I wonder if you could just talk about him both as a player and a person.
Yeah, as a player, he's got to be one of the best kickers to ever come through the league. He's a huge weapon. You know, any time from 55 yards in, there's a high likelihood you're going to have 3 points. And, you know, he can even go back farther than that. He's a huge weapon in the kickoff department. You know, he almost eliminates the return. So he's a huge weapon. But he's an even better person. You know, I think it says a lot about a kicker is one of your team leaders. But that's truly who he is. And he's earned that. And he's a huge weapon. I mean, you know, he's a huge weapon. I'm excited we have him.
Coach, our next question is in the back rear under the lights on the right.
Hey, Coach. Mary Lee Adams, WDHN Dothan, over here. I believe 8 returning on the offense this year. How big of a confidence booster is that?
Well, of course, you know, we had our 6-game winning streak, and we were playing very good football, you know, on the offensive side during that side. And, you know, we had some injuries to our quarterback and then, of course, Cameron Petway, and we really never recovered. So the good thing is we have a veteran offensive line. We have our 2 main running backs back. We've got a group of receivers that were all, for the most part, freshmen and redshirt freshmen last year, and they were still kind of learning. In the spring, they kind of took that next step, so I'm really looking forward to watching that group. And then, of course, you know, that I've talked about earlier is we got 2 veteran-type quarterbacks that are in a battle. We have quarterback depth for the first time, really, in the last few years. And so that's a really strong comfort. And then, of course, Chip Lindsey, our new offensive coordinator, I've got a lot of confidence in him. He's going to do a super job. So we got a chance to be pretty good on offense.
Coach, our next question here from center left.
Hey, Coach.
Joe
Whalen. ABC Birmingham, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Do you have a timetable in mind as far as determining a starting quarterback, and is it important to do that sooner or later?
It definitely is, you know, sooner rather than later. Last year we let it drag out too long. I mean, we've got to do that sooner. But at the same time, we want to make sure we're thorough. And usually the first 5 days of fall camp is – a lot of install. You can still evaluate with the 7-on-7s and the team reps and all that, but there's nothing like a scrimmage type deal. And so hopefully we don't have a set date and time, but me and Chip are on the same page about earlier rather than later.
Coach, next question here in the center on the right.
Hey, Coach Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV. What were the emotions at the end of last year's LSU game there on that last play?
Yeah, that was a wild one. First of all, LSU's a great team. It went back and forth. I think Daniel Carlson kicked 6 field goals, and that last play, you know, they were trying to get it off, and they scored, and they celebrated. But I felt real strong that the clock had went out, but you just got to be patient, and you wait. And, you know, that was a huge win for us at the time.
And just your thoughts of going to Baton Rouge this year. It's always been a tough place to play.
Yeah, you know, the last – you know, the numerous times we've been there, we hadn't had a lot of luck. We're going to have to play extremely well. They're a very talented team, and we're going to have to figure out a way to win that.
Coach, over to the far left on the front.
Justin McKellar with WSFA. A lot of talk on the offense, but I want to focus on the defense for a bit. In particular, Daniel Thomas, how have you kind of seen his progression, especially since the Iron Bowl where he had a breakout game?
You know, Daniel Thomas really had an outstanding year, not just on defense, but helped us on special teams too. You can tell that this spring was good for him too. And, you know, he has got a nose for the ball, and I call him a heat-seeking missile. I mean, he just goes 100%, and he will be in the mix for us defensively.
Okay, next question, Coach on the right.
Hey, Coach, Jesse Merrick, Way TV up in Huntsville. I know you've obviously got Cam Petway and Kerryon Johnson, but specifically with Kerryon, how do you see his role being expanded in this new offense?
Yeah, a good question. You know, Chip really worked hard in the spring to get the ball to our running backs in the passing game a little bit more than we have in the past. Of course, Kerryon Johnson has receiver-like skills. And so, you know, the versatility that he has, I know Coach Lindsey's got a great plan for him. You know, he catches the ball well, he runs the ball well, and he's probably our best protector, too.
Okay, Coach, in the back left.
Coach, going to WTBY, who's for Dothan. Where does Sean White's health status going to the fall camp?
Yeah, Sean White's 100%. You know, he's doing everything in the weight room. He's doing everything running-wise and all that. And he's ready to compete. He's got a great attitude. He's just biting, you know, chomping at the bit to get out there and compete in fall camp.
Rick Carley, go ahead.
Hey, Coach Rick Carley, Fox 6. How do you personally deal with expectations? A lot of fans are buzzing about your team this year, thinking, man, this is going to be the year.
Yeah.
And some
Yeah, well, first of all, that's the kind of jobs you want, that have high expectations. And Auburn's a place that expects to win championships, and I feel the same way. The good thing is this year we got a real chance. Now, we got to seize the moment. We play a tough schedule. You got to win close games and everything that goes with it. But it is what it is, and it's a good thing from a coach's standpoint that you have a team that has an opportunity to do something special. So from a coaching staff, we got to seize a moment. From a player standpoint, we got to seize a moment, and I'm looking forward to watching this team.
Coach over on the far right against the wall.
Right here. Hey, Coach. Sarah Hodges, Way 31 in Huntsville. Malik Miller, your running back, freshman running back, received a medical redshirt. How big is that for Auburn's future?
You know, that's big. He's a very talented young man. And you saw last year when he got the ball, he did some positive things. And it was unfortunate that he got hurt. But the good thing is, you know, he'll be back this year. He had a very good spring. You know, he's competing for playing time in that running back position. And the good thing is we have a lot of guys that we feel like can play, and he's one of them.
Coach, next question here far left.
Coach Michael Cottle out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We talked about the LSU game last year, kind of buyout bowl, you know, like something was going to happen with that ball game. And now people are picking you or maybe the Iron Bowl to decide the West. Could you speak to just how quickly things can turn around and fortune can swing either way?
Well, I mean, we're playing in the toughest league. In college football in the West, and you gotta win close games. You're at a place like Auburn or any of the other place, you know, they expect to win championships, and like I said earlier, I expect to too. So just the competition part, and it's a man's league, and you gotta win.
Okay, next question. I think we're in the back right.
Coach Colin Deaver from College Station. It's kind of an interesting trend in the series with Texas A&M. The road team has actually won every single game since A&M joined the SEC. Why do you think that home teams have so much trouble when you guys play?
You know, that's a good question. That's really rare. You know, I'd take you back to 2 years, I guess 3 years ago. Boy, we lost a tough one. We fumbled on the one-yard line going in and end up fumbling on the last drive and lost. That was a huge loss for us. And, of course, this past year was a tough one early, but they were extremely good on defense, and I think Garrett was healthy then too. But when we went there, we played very well. So, you know, that's a good question. That's rare. You know, I hope it stays the same this year.
Okay, Coach, I think we have another question here on the left back.
He's reading.
Yes,
something.
There we are. There
yeah, Aslan Hodges at CBS Dothan. Coach, most of the people around the nation got to know you in 2013 season, fist bumping and being so excited on the sideline. We might not have seen so much of that in the last few years. Trey Matthews says he's seen you change, though, this past offseason, a little calm, cool, collected. How have you changed in the last year as a coach and a man?
Yeah, you know, I said earlier that this will be my fifth year to be a coach at Auburn in this league, and I've learned some things. And, you know, I brought up and made my name in coaching on the offensive side of the football, and, you know, probably 2 years ago it just kind of got to a point where it's tough to do both, be the coordinator and the head coach, and I kind of played around with it. And then finally last year I felt real strong to turn the offense over, and it was the right move to make. And then after this season – or after last season, just set back, and that's where I am in my career right now. And I'm at peace with that, and it's the right thing to do. And I've got a lot of confidence in Chip Lindsey. We come from the same tree. He's a high school coach. He was with me in 2013 in an off-the-field role, but he was really my right-hand man in that off-the-field role. So we have a great relationship. He's great with quarterback development, and he inherited a pretty talented offense.
Coach, next question here in the center right.
Coach Todd Summers, WSPA TV. Talk about game two, going to Clemson to play the defending national champs, and what you learned about that Tigers team playing them very early on last year.
Well, you know, if you look at the big picture of the whole schedule, I mean, that's one early, the defending national champs playing on the road. It's going to be a huge game. It's going to be a huge game to really show where we're at. And I know our players and our coaches are looking forward to it, and that was a tough loss last year. You know, we had him at home and just didn't play well, and had some missed opportunities. And so, you know, we'll be motivated for that one.
Coach, next question here, the left center.
Stephen Gunner against Faye Montgomery. I believe in the main room you called Marlon Davidson a guy as a freshman last year, played like a veteran. Trey Matthews said he was a freak of nature. How much better could he be going into his true sophomore year?
Well, what he did last year as a true freshman, I hadn't seen very many people in my time that was been able to mentally deal with everything that he did. He's very talented, but mentally he didn't act like a freshman. So he's one of those guys that's capable of taking that next step and just being a complete dominant player. I think he's got a chance. He had a great spring. He's had a good off season. So we're really hoping he takes that next step.
Coach, we're now on the risers on the right side.
Coach, Brandon Cameron, WVUA 23. You were talking in the other room a little bit about the talk about moving to the East, and I know you said that was slightly blown out of proportion, but you were talking about why you like playing in the West. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Well, I mean, the West is the best league in college football, and what is it, 6-7 years, I don't know, maybe more than that, the winner of the West has won the SEC. Just from a competitive standpoint, from a coach's standpoint, and I'm not the only one, the rest of them probably would say the same. You like playing in the best league and playing the best competition. And there's something to be said for that. So that's kind of what I was saying.
That is part one with Gus Malzahn. We will have the rest of that when we return after this break. You're listening to the Tom Abraham Show here on a Throwback Thursday in the Doghouse on 730-1039. The
Ump. Sports Radio 730-1039. The Ump. The Ump.
This is Tiki Barber with a CBS Sports Minute brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. Watching the ESPYs last night, you now know that outside of the award winners, the star of the night was Peyton Manning, who took the stage with the same deft skill that he used to command on the gridiron. He was genuinely funny and played his hosting duties with aplomb, especially when he zinged Kevin Durant about wanting to also join the dominant U.S. women's gymnastics team. KD unamusedly deadpanned it, though I think he was in on the joke. Later in the program, Julian Edelman returned some of the fire when he said, "Peyton Manning's kind of killing it," caveating with, "We're indoors, though." We laughed, but then I looked it up. While his TD to interception ratio and completion percentages are slightly higher indoor, he actually won 70% of his outdoor games versus 68% of his indoor ones. It just goes to show you, you can try to go after Peyton Manning all you want, but somehow, he always seems to come out on top. I'm Tiki Barber.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Are you ready, Alabama? It's time to enter the Doghouse.
Well, Bruce Springsteen on a Throwback Thursday. A little more Gus Malzahn. I think T-Mac told me that we can get it in here before the top of the hour, so let's hear the end of Gus Malzahn's session in the TV room. This was earlier today at SEC Media Days.
Chris Burris, CBS in Birmingham. Also heard you say in the other room, haven't felt this way since 2013. What'd you mean by that?
Well, I meant from our team standpoint. Our team is hungry. They wasn't happy the way that the season ended. And we went on that 6-game winning streak, and we felt like we had a real chance to do something special last year, and we wasn't able to do that. So I know our players are hungry, they're motivated, they've got that chip on their shoulder, and what I was doing is I was comparing that I really hadn't felt this way about a team really since 2013.
Okay, Coach, over here to the far left.
Coach Hall, Professor Junior, Alabama Center. Would you say that player development, at one point, quarterback development has been a shortfall of Auburn of late, and you look for that to be improved this season to have the next guy up ready if called upon?
Well, I think like I said earlier, you know, this year I can tell you we have quality quarterback depth. That was our Achilles heel the last 2 years. You know, when our starter went down, we didn't perform very well. So that's going to be a big key. And I should mention Malik Willis too, a true freshman that really caught my eye in spring. I think he's got a chance to be an excellent quarterback.
Okay, Coach, right here in the center.
Coach, you talked about giving up the play-calling duties. How hard is that to do if the offense struggles? How hard is that for you to stay the course and not sort of take it back over?
Well, I'm all in with Chip Lindsey. He's going to do a great job. And, you know, we have a chance to be a very good offense. And if you look back traditionally, when we've had quality depth at the quarterback position, we've been one of the best in our league, if not the country. So, you know, I have nothing but confidence, you know, in him, and he's going to do a great job.
Moving over here to the far left, Coach.
Kind of in that same vein, Ed Ogeron said the one thing he
Coach. Hugh was just in here talking about turning those rings. Yeah. You mentioned, is it trust? Is that the biggest?
Yeah, there's no doubt it's a trust. And, you know, like I said, you're in this league and you're a head coach. I don't care who you are, there's going to be a learning curve. And the transition of calling plays and being the offensive coordinator, trying to be the head coach, there's been a little bit of this. But I'm to the point now where, like I said, the big thing with me with Chip Lindsey is I trust him. And he's going to do a great job.
Do we have one over here on the right? No? Okay, here we are to the left front.
Yeah, Jalen Harris, you know, the spring, he may have been one of the most improved players in the spring. Larry Porter came in, has done a super job with Jalen. He's really matured. You know, you saw in the spring game he had a catch or two, and I think that's one area, too. Not only Chip wants to throw the ball to the backs a little bit more, but he wants to get the tight end more involved. And so, you know, I'm real proud of Jalen. He's set up to have a solid year.
We've got time for two more questions up here on the riser on the right here.
Hey, Coach. You got that four-star safety recruit, Kondarius, on Monday, and he picked you all over schools like Alabama and Clemson. Why do you think he went with Auburn?
Say that one more time.
The four-star safety recruit, the commit that you got on Monday, why do you think he chose Auburn over?
Yeah, I can't talk specifically about a recruit, you know, but I will tell you, you know, recruiting is going very well. We think we are set up to have a big-time class. And so I'm excited about the future.
Coach, final question over here on the left rear.
Taylor Tannenbaum, WHMC in Huntsville. I know Jordan Peters came a little bit earlier in the summer. How have you seen him develop so far, and do you see him having a role this upcoming fall?
Well, he's going to have an opportunity. He's got a skill set. I know Coach Steele and Coach Brown are very high on him as far as what he's done so far and his attitude. So I'm really looking forward to watching him in fall camp. You know, he'll have a chance to compete and could possibly even help us on special teams.
Coach, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you all.
How can you not know that? How can you be in a position to ask a question of a coach and be credentialed at SEC Media Days and not know that they can't talk about verbal commitments? How do you not know that? Cream knows that. He's like 9 years old, for God's sakes. I mean, how do you not know this? Rip that credential. All right, there you go. Gus Malzahn on from earlier today. Now you've heard it. All right, coming up next, it's the Fab Five and open lines to start things off. Is Jimbo Fisher right about the ACC versus the SEC? Want to weigh in on that? I'll reset it next, right here on 730-1039. Yum.